welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 215. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this controversial episode of the podcast, we have Peter. Oh, no, he didn't. Willington.
Oh, yes, I did.
Ah, oh, you've blown my link. And Keith Andrew.
It's all pantomime, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's so terrible, isn't it? That's a terrible start to the podcast. Not only have I ruined a link, not only have I ruined a gag, but I've also done a great big swear. That's terrible. That's awful.
Sorry, we'll beep out the... No, we won't beep out the swear. We'll keep it all in.
No.
No, we can't. It would be too... This is the extreme episode now where we all just... It all falls apart at the very beginning. We just start swearing. We take hostages. We start making crank calls. And
I suppose it is a controversial episode. So if I did... I did drop the F-bomb. So yeah. that's how to...
Did you actually say it? I didn't... It's worrying. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, I did. I did. But then you've got a bit of a potty mouth, haven't you, really?
I have found myself on the phone to my mother, actually, occasionally having to stop myself just about to say
Is she cool with it, though?
She would not be. She would not be cool with it at all.
Would she be okay with you saying... I mean, let's find out how far... let's see how far we can go. So would the word poppycock be all right there? Because that's a bit...
Because one syllable of that word is rude.
That's actually my nickname, so yeah.
Okay, poppycock. What about damn you or damn it or something like that? Damn. What about damn?
She's not a Mormon or anything, yeah.
I don't know, but I'm not saying that. I'm saying some people really don't like it when you do curses.
I could probably get away with the S one as well. It's just F's and above.
F's and above. Fair enough.
I probably shouldn't say this. My mum's quite, like, doesn't really mind. I speak fairly frankly to her, so she kind of understands. As long as I'm not using it in a pejorative fashion, you know. I can use it to stress things, but if I were to call her a F or something, that's different.
My mother's a born-again evangelist Christian, so I don't think she'd be too happy with me dropping the F-bomb.
We're all back together this week. John isn't here, unfortunately. He's over in MWC, WMC, some arrangement of those letters, in Barcelona, reporting on Mobile World conferencing stuff.
Is that what he's doing?
Mm. I think so. Oh, last time I heard him, he was sitting in a cafe somewhere getting out of the rain.
Because he didn't have an umbrella.
Yeah.
Well, Englishman doesn't have an umbrella.
I know, honestly. He's letting the side down. Hasn't he watched The Avengers? And by that, I mean the Avengers from 1995, the TV series.
What? You mean Iron Man doesn't have a brolly?
It's probably in there somewhere, but he doesn't bust it out at times of crisis, no. So John isn't with us, but we do have our returning Peter Wellington and Keith Andrew. Woo!
I'm told you didn't even mention my absence last week by one of our trusty listeners.
Well, I just glossed over the absence altogether. Well, to be fair, we had quite a lot last week. John was giving us lots of up-to-date stuff. He'd come back from Russia and was giving us the skinny on loads of things. It was quite interesting.
Really?
No. Yeah, of course it was.
It's not a word I've ever used to describe John, but yeah.
I learned things.
I could have told you lots of things from Germany, but I caught some horrible virus and... didn't really know who I was for a week.
So Keith is healthy, everybody, for a brief second. So we're going to do this podcast really quick before he gets diphtheria or whatever else it is he's going to come down with next. Speaking of which, let's talk about some newsy stuff. We've got some info on Dead Trigger 2. We've got a little storm in a teacup over lawsuits with Apple. And of course, we've got to address Real Racing 3. So to stare all that stuff in the face, let's go over to the news. Right, before we get deep into the news, we're going to talk to you about a few updates that have been released for current iOS games. Starting off with Bad Piggies, that other game that Rovio did, other than Angry Birds. They have released a new update called Road Hogs, which essentially introduces a new mode into the game, which will allow you to compete in a kind of time trial-esque sort of thing. So instead of just making your contraption so it reaches the end of the course, you're actually going to have to do it in as quick a time as possible. So I guess that means you'll be strapping in more of those fan things to it or whatever. I played it for a little bit when it first came out, and I just remember bolting on lots of fans to see how fast I could make it go. Is anyone still playing it?
Bad Piggies?
Yeah.
No.
I haven't played it yet.
You haven't played it at all. I played it, well, obviously, during the first week, but I got to admit, I didn't go back to it. But they are still supporting it, so Roadhogs is going to be coming out, and with Roadhogs, you get 30 new levels added to the Flight in the Night episode that was added a couple of months ago. So new levels and an extra new mode. That's all live and ready to go for you to download. Also, if you happen to own what's it called, Plague Inc., which is that virus simulation game where you were faced with a world map and you're basically trying to kill off the world's population as quickly as possible by creating lots of random diseases, which I actually quite liked. This was a fun game. They've introduced an update which adds a new virus called the Necroa virus, which is basically a zombie update from what I can gather. It says that the Necroa virus is relatively unknown and said to be an aggressive germ that boasts extreme regenerative abilities. Which
that is a fresh idea.
I know, because it obviously looked around and said, how can we possibly break the mold and do something new and different? And they said, oh, zombies! I'm only guessing this, right? They haven't actually said zombies anywhere, but sounds to me like it's a zombie virus, which is...
Maybe that's what I had.
I don't think you bounce back quite so well from the zombie virus thing.
I might be a zombie right now. You can't see me.
I've always, Keith. I've always said that you're pretty brainless. Because of zombies.
I think that joke got the silence it deserved.
So yeah, Plague Inc. New update. Have some zombies because you know where else are you going to get your zombie update fix than in a mobile computer game. speaking of zombies, Dead Trigger 2, the upcoming sequel to the fairly popular Dead Trigger, has been unveiled at MWCWVZ, other acronyms as well, in Barcelona. They've been talking about it, the Madfinger, the guys behind it, and apparently it's going to be free to play, which shouldn't come as any great surprise to anyone. But the team is running a test version, or a version without in-app payments in it, with the idea that it's trying to develop it with, quote, pure gameplay. And then it'll obviously add extra things to it later. The in-app purchases can be sort of tucked in alongside the central gameplay. The fact that it's free-to-play shouldn't surprise anybody, because most things are now. It's interesting because Dead Trigger was one of the ones that it started out being a game you pay for, then it switched to free to play, and everyone got quite cross about it. Did you guys play this one?
What, Dead Trigger?
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, I played Dead Trigger because I was going to talk about it on the podcast, and this was like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks ago now.
Oh, yeah.
I played it, and then I was so bored by it, I just kind of thought, I don't really want to kick it to death. Like it's sort of Left 4 Dead, almost just sort of like tower defense-y, in that you just have to sort of stand there and survive.
Yeah, you get chucked into specific areas, don't you? And you're pretty much just running around the same small space.
And it's got that touchscreen first person shooter controls.
That's the thing that I took issue with. Yeah, I find it very difficult to get. Turning around is just such a pain in the ass. But I think people kept raising it, not just because it was a zombie shooter that people quite enjoyed, but also it looked really good. It was a very pretty
great
game.
Yeah.
So people were constantly pointing to it and going, look, it's one of those tech demo type games, much like Real Racing 3, which we'll talk about later. You hold it up as a shining example of, check it out, these visuals are amazing. But no, I didn't play it for a great deal afterwards. But the sequel is coming. They don't know about a date yet. They haven't revealed that. But I guess it's a good thing that they're trying to build the game, a version of the game without in-app payments, so that they are really trying to focus in on the gameplay aspect of it.
Absolutely. And I think the potential downfall there, of course, is that if you build a game and go, right, this is the game that we want to make, and then you have that, and then you go, right, now how can we charge people for this? I think that's the point, unfortunately, that you start to come up with issues in games development, because the only way to charge for, you know, the only way to charge people in for sort of freemium stuff is to either hold back gameplay, you know, that's the most profitable way, or have, like, you know, added skins or extra bonuses or sort of, you know, cosmetic stuff that doesn't actually affect the game that much. So it's very admirable, but at the same time, I think we should kind of show a little bit of caution on this one, because if they're going to be adding in stuff so that we can pay money for it, that's unfortunately the very fine line that they're going to have to balance. You know, so but yeah, I mean, I really wanted to like Dead Trigger, so if they nail the controls to the second one, I'll definitely play it.
Here's something I wanted to raise. It's relevant because of a couple of things this week. Back in 2011, I think, Apple got into a bit of a sticky situation with parents who had their children download in-app purchases and games, and their parents ended up with these terrifically high bills. Basically, they turned around and suddenly they got a 1,500 quid bill from Apple, and they said, "What's this?" And they looked at their child, and their child looked up at them with a kind of, it was Steve. And it turned out that kids had just been, you know, pressing buttons willy-nilly and running up massive bloody great bills. And so the parents sued Apple. And I presume, like, I don't know, locked their kids in the shed, or taped their hands up so they couldn't play iOS games.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, or maybe, you know, watched what their children were playing a bit more carefully. No, not that last one. That would be ridiculous. finally, after it's been like 2 years in the going now, Apple has settled the lawsuit and decided that if you can prove that your kid ran up a massive bill during this time, then you can technically claim compensation of around about $5. If you got charged more than that, so if it was over 30 quid or more, you can start asking for cash refunds. We're a little hazy on the system of just how you're going to be able to prove this. Like, I mean, how do you prove that your kid bought it and that you didn't?
No, I don't think there's any. I think they're just relying on people not doing it.
Not being bothered with the going through the process.
I mean, you know, and it's only a measure they're bringing in to satisfy these parents anyway, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be worldwide. It won't be worldwide, rather, but US-wide. But I don't think they'll be promoting the fact that you can do this, because you'll get all kinds of people saying... I mean, and then what happens with that in-app purchase? So if you've made an in-app purchase which unlocks something in that game and they refund you, do they then take that access away?
Oh, I doubt they would be bothered to do that.
I think it's all a bit strange.
Apple will just take a hit on that, won't they? They'll just kind of suck that up, I think. They've got deep enough pockets.
But there's been this other story today that just appears to have been resolved in the last hour or so.
Yeah.
A couple of parents in the UK whose kid had spent £1,700 on an iPad game, and he'd asked for the password while they had... It was a very interesting story. Asked for the password while they had guests over, and they'd just given it to him, thinking it was a free thing. And they were annoyed because until this story went live on Eurogamer, Apple had basically hadn't given them any reaction whatsoever. And Twitter's kind of been split down the middle today with people saying, well, why are you letting your kid use your iPad? I mean, he's a young kid. He's in like his little school uniform in the picture, looking all angelic.
I think it was a Daily Mail story originally, which...
Well, that's the young
kid. Yeah, good.
But the picture was hilarious.
They've caved now and done it, and I don't know. There were some people on Twitter who've been saying, and I don't mean people, I mean as in journalists, who've been saying, I don't mean people, I mean journalists. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I'm not just looking at randoms, but they've been saying, oh, well, you know, your parents, you shouldn't be letting your kid do that. And other people saying, well, you know, this is £1,700. It's a bit ridiculous. I'm in two minds because Apple aren't stupid. And when these rules came in, you know, when in-app purchases were unveiled, the kind of games they were being put in, they will have known that kids will have been making these purchases without their parents' knowledge. They probably didn't estimate that people would be spending £1,700. They probably didn't even imagine developers make it possible for someone to spend £1,700. But you kind of imagine they probably thought, well, this is going to be a nice little learner. You know, we'll see what happens. So it was obvious that this would happen. So you could say, well, Apple should have had fail-safes in there from the start, you know. But then again, it was a new, entirely new thing. And you do have to think, I see kids who have all these devices or are using their parents. If I had a kid, they wouldn't be able to go near my phone or anything I owned like that, because
anything with access to a virtual shop.
And you know, and if they did and they spent thousands of pounds, why should I get that money back? You know, they made those purchases in, you know, on my machine, which I let them use. You shouldn't be saying, oh, you know, definitely. Well, how outrageous. They won't give me money back. You know, look after your kids. It's
Exactly. I think the truth of the matter is, unfortunately, less sensational than a lot of people on Twitter want to make it. It's not one or the other. It's both. Like, it's both places at fault. It's Apple's fault for not sort of curbing this earlier and to not have the forethought that this was going to happen. And it's the fault of the parents for going, yeah, sure, you can have a device with my credit card details on. Yeah, no problem. Like, you know, to sort of lay the blame squarely at one place or another is absolutely preposterous.
We had a developer talk to us on this last month, and they had in-app purchases in their game, and they were making a version for kids, and they were going paid with it, because he said basically he didn't feel comfortable with releasing an app clearly aimed at children that was entirely monetized by in-app purchases. So yeah, it is both sides, but you know, parents. Don't leave your phone and your tablet.
No, and don't tell them the password.
I didn't even have a television until I was 15.
Oh, it's a hard life. But I am inclined to agree. It isn't just one thing or the other. The problem is these devices are being used in the same way as televisions are and any other kind of games machine is, as a good way to occupy kids. So it's not surprising that these sorts of things happen, and more and more the devices themselves act as virtual shops as well as just games machines. So this problem is a new problem, but don't give the kids the passwords or something.
It takes up the part, you know. Yeah.
Apparently, this is that Apple's going to be emailing 23 million users who may have been affected by this.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine it will be anybody who made any in-app purchase in America between the period of this and this.
Yeah. I still don't know how they're going to prove it.
What if they don't have a child? You know, well, they know it was my nephew, or you know,
it was my parrot.
I think they just let them have it this time.
In fact, I've seen animals, YouTube videos of animals playing iOS games. So technically, what if your chameleon or your frog does it? Because I've seen them, you know, the tongue-flicking games or cats pawing at things. Technically, a cat could buy a thing.
I think if you've got...
During that time.
If you've got a pet that can play video games, I think actually what you should do is not bother responding to Apple, but go to a circus.
They're ten a penny now, these talented cats.
You've got too much time on your hands if you're watching these YouTube videos.
Technically, while there was a no password situation, a cat could genuinely have made a purchase. It actually could have. So, you know, if a kid can do it, the cat could have just gone tap, tap, tap. Oh, meow.
There's a whole new market. Meow! There's a whole new market there, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, Apple have sorted that out. Hooray for them. moving on. This I thought was quite nice, because I heard about it at the end of last year. There was a game that was released called Battle Dungeon, which was originally intended as a turn-based strategy game that was designed as a multiplayer affair. So it's set in a fantasy world. You're contained in sort of little dungeons. It got loads and loads of hits during the first week. Loads of people got hold of a copy and were playing it, so much so that the servers got completely overloaded, which would have been brilliant news if it wasn't for the fact that most of the people playing it had pirated the game and were playing it illegally, which caused the servers to fall over and eventually caused the developers to take it offline altogether, which caused the game to die, even the single-player component, because single-player AI lived on the server. So no server, no single-player game, and basically it completely killed the game. And it was used as a story to say, look, this is how piracy can genuinely kill games, sort of full stop. In fact, with Dead Trigger, Madfinger were flashing that around when they made the switch from paid premium to free-to-play. They were saying, oh, we had to do it because of piracy. And then later went, oh, maybe not. Sort of changed their story slightly. But these guys, it seems, genuinely were hit by it. Good news is, it's coming back. It's been resurrected as Battle Dungeon... Was it called? Battle Dungeon Risen, very fittingly. And it's coming back as a totally single player only campaign. So they're building it with the AI, you know, built into the game itself. They've added a few new tweaks. So there's a lighting engine that now makes pretties up the thing. And it's going to be completely in-app purchase free, and it's going to be available for £1.49 or £1.99. So it's going to be cheaper and no in-app purchases, and unfortunately no multiplayer at this point, but I don't know if that's going to maybe turn up later. But it's going to have another running stab at the App Store, and maybe it will see if it can last a little bit longer. I didn't actually get to play it when it first came out. Did anyone else? I suppose not.
I got a few illegal versions, but yeah.
A few of them. It was all down to you.
Unfortunately not, and I don't know if it's because I'm in a bit of a grumpy mood.
Oh no, Pete.
I know. I'm in a right grump, Keith.
You sound too happy.
This is his bad mood.
I'm in a flipping bad mood. Oh,
careful! He's dropped another F bomb.
Oh no! It's I gave up smoking like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I am absolutely. But this is a prime example of why piracy is really. It really gets to me, like when people start talking about it, like, "Ha, I'm just gonna pirate a copy of it. That'd be brilliant." Like, for the sake of £3 per person, whoever wanted to play this, right? It sunk and financially destroyed a company. Like, not wanting to spend £3, right? Which is the price of what? A Happy Meal at McDonald's, right? They financially destroyed a company.
Yeah.
Like that is such a.
The argument seems to get thinner. If you take it from a principled standpoint, it's bad, full stop. If you take it on a kind of sliding scale, people pirating like expensive games because they can't afford it. When people turn around and say, well, I can't afford to spend 50, 60 quid, so I'm nicking it. You go, it's still not, you know, you still shake your fist and everything, but you can. There's a tiny amount of understanding for, yeah, well, I guess, I mean, I can't afford to buy lots of 40 quid games, so that argument is true. It doesn't stand up, but it's a true point. When someone says, oh, I couldn't afford 69p, it's like, well,
if you're saying I can't afford the 69p that's required for Angry Birds, then you need to seriously question how you could afford buying that iPhone in the first place.
Yeah, so it seems a bit, I mean, it's a weak argument anyway, but still it does seem a little bit odd. And in this case, yeah, it really did take them down and took the entire game down. But it's good news to see that it's coming back. Yes. I didn't get a chance to play it because it was only up literally for a week before it got taken down, so I never got to play it. But I'll have a go at it when it does reemerge. I'm not sure exactly when it's coming out. Sometime next month, so March, it'll make an appearance. So let's all go and have a look at it and see if we can turn it into a nice, happy success story.
Yay.
It could be crap, though, so who knows. But no, let's say it's going to be brilliant and have a look regardless. Okay, actually, I'll talk about something that wasn't... This isn't on the list, but this literally just came out today. Breaking news here, people. They've announced the sequel to Anomaly Warzone Earth.
Woohoo!
Which is cool. Keith, now you're our resident tower defense person, sort of, because you like that fantasy one.
Yep, that's the one.
Well, no, this is a chance to bring you in to a conversation about games. Because you play one of those games, you like that.
Yeah, I've not played this one.
No, well, you should. But well, the first one you should, because Anomaly, it stands up as one of the shining examples of badass tower. Well, it's a tower offense game, really.
Mr. Former podcast host Will Wilson was a big fan of the first one, as I understand.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's that sci-fi kind of setting that.
So you're not down with the lasers.
Well, it's just a bit. Been there, done that, isn't it? But I don't know. It was always on my kind of should playlist, but never did with this game. After
it became rather popular because of decent tower offense gameplay. So you're kind of trailing a force through an enemy compound and fending off the towers rather than the other way around. And also, like, really good visuals. Really, really good visuals. Beautiful sci-fi universe, lots of neon colours and sweet animations. And it just worked really well. And it's from this Polish studio called 11-Bit Studios. And they knocked out a beautiful game. Last year, they released a kind of quasi-update to it, which was Anomaly Korea, which added... It was essentially Anomaly, but then it had some extra levels in it. So it was a sort of update, add-on thing. But it worked separately. But literally today, this afternoon, they announced Anomaly 2. They threw a trailer up online and directed everyone to their site and their Facebook page and went, oh yeah, check it out. Which we did, and it was good. It's really, it's even like mad pretty now. It's a gorgeous looking game. They've got a new engine, looks fantastic. And they've added a multiplayer component, and I'm going to have to check whether other games have done this, because this seems like a total no-brainer. But they're going to do it a multiplayer mode in which one person controls the towers and the other person controls the advancing force. Which is, that's a no-brainer to me. And I haven't played all the tower defense games, so I don't know if that's a new thing or if that's been done elsewhere. But if it hasn't been done elsewhere, why? Because that makes perfect sense.
See, it probably has on PC. I've not seen it.
Yeah, maybe.
On these funny mobile things we play games on.
No. But that would be absolutely awesome. So, firstly, it's got this multiplayer aspect, one person defending, one person attacking. Secondly, your advancing troops, so your little craft, can transform into other things. And they show you this in the trailer, so your tank's trundling along, and then there's obviously a tap or something, and it goes all Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and turns into a big mech.
I thought you were speaking Japanese there.
No, my accent's a bit shoddy. So apart from it looking quite fun, it gives each machine a dual function.
Is this going to run on my horrible iPad 1?
Well, that's the question, you see, because despite the fact that it's been announced, they haven't mentioned anything about mobile yet.
Oh. Well,
they didn't on Twitter and they didn't on Facebook. It was confirmed for Mac and PC and all that, but nothing on mobile. Now, the previous two have obviously come to mobile, so we got in touch with them and said, about the iOS and that.
Is that what we actually said? Because that's quite unprofessional.
Yeah, well, paraphrasing slightly. But a guy got back to us and said that the team would, quote, love to bring the sequel to mobile.
But they're very busy.
But they're very busy, so they're stuck.
Washing their hair.
Yeah. I would be very surprised if it didn't turn up on iOS.
Is that what we're just thinking, in the future?
Yeah.
Rather than day one.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, there might be a bit of a break between the two. I don't know about the first one, whether there was a gap between the ports.
I think there was, didn't there? Yeah. I don't know.
But, I mean, I'm pretty sure that they've done reasonably well with it on iOS. It was a very popular game and it was very highly rated, and so I'd be very surprised if it didn't eventually come over here sooner rather than later, hopefully. And they're clearly game for it, and I'm sure they're just being coy and they'll announce it at a later date.
It's a weird turn of phrase though, isn't it? Love to. It's like, that's the kind of thing you say to people when you don't really want to do something.
Or when you're making it, yeah, we should meet up more often. I'd love to, James.
Yeah, but I can't.
Anyway, gotta go, you know. Hair needs to be washed.
Is that the excuse you use?
It's not a very good excuse when you see a picture of me, though. It doesn't work. I just need to sort of stick my head out the window in a rainstorm briefly. And that's it. Anyway, that's good news. So it's good news that it exists. It'll be even better news when they confirm it. I'm going to go out on a limb and say when, rather than if.
Crazy.
Yeah, I know. Right. Let's get to it, because...
Whoa, James. Before we move on to the new releases, I'm going to hijack this podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes. Because, listeners, the Pocket Gamer Awards 2013 are now live.
That's pretty live.
It's pretty live. What you want to do is go to podgamer.co.uk/PG Awards 2013, or you can just search for it on the site. And basically, you can vote for your favourite games of 2012. We've gone through, like, over... I say we. Like, the editorial team got given, like, a massive load of game names. And was asked to basically pick out the creme de la creme. We went through round after round, and as Keith will attest, after round of voting to whittle it down to 16 per category, except for overall game of the year, which has got 20. And you can vote for your favorite, and you absolutely should. So head on over to podgamer.co.uk/PG Awards 2013, or go to the search bar and type it in, and you can vote for your favorite games. And also, if you like the page on Facebook, and this is the best because you get something out of it, there's a little button at the top right of the Pocket Gamer Awards, and you click it, and you go through to Facebook, and if you click like, you're in with a chance of winning an iPad Mini or a Samsung Galaxy Tab 2. Boom! Boom! How amazing. That's pretty amazing. Like, all you need to do is... Yeah, you can have one or the other. Yeah.
Right. I can see one's going to be infinitely more popular than the other one. So well, I won't say which.
With these listeners, probably. But like,
yeah, that's true.
I would quite like both, and I don't know which one you're insinuating.
I'm not gonna even give a hint.
That is fine then. But that is a prize value of roughly £300. It's well worth time. It's well worth your time. Go and show your support for 2012's amazing list of games.
Make yourself heard.
Indeed.
More than just shouting out the window.
Yeah.
Like that weirdo who lives down the street does. You know the one. Always shrieking.
On my street, it's me.
Oh, yeah, probably. You too. Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for that, Peter. That's important news. Go and do that post haste while you're listening to the podcast, obviously. In that case, we'll move straight on to this week's new releases. First up on this week's new releases, we have a small game which you may or may not have heard of. It's called Real Racing 3. Now, we're not going to go into a great deal of detail about this because both myself and Peter have been playing it, and we're going to have a little set to in the what we've been playing.
I've played one race.
And Keith has played a race.
And then I logged into Facebook and it crashed. So, you know.
Yeah, it does that. So we'll talk about that more later. It is free to play, which is one of the things we will be discussing, and you can download that right now for your iPhone and your iPad. This is a controversial thing. Slightly less controversially, we have Aliens vs. Predator Evolution, which is a game that people have been looking forward to. Slightly, I've sort of been looking forward to it too, because I do like my Alien franchise. It was great once upon a time. I've never been quite so keen on the AVP thing, though. The movies were rubbish. I have a friend who was really into it because of the original comics, the graphic novels that brought them together. But any time they put them on screen, it's just been terrible hackery of the highest order. But the idea of the games, and especially the PC games, the original Alien vs. Predator on the PC 1 and 2, they were great. So we were kind of like, ooh, high hopes. Especially given the atrocious reception that Aliens Colonial Marines got. So we were all thinking like, oh, it can't be worse than that. And it came out this week. And Harry reviewed it. And he said it was rubbish.
He said more than that.
Yeah, in fact, he said it was a broken, uninspired, frustrating mess of a brawler that even fans of the series won't find much to like in.
Actually, have you seen what the average reader score is for the game?
No, what is it?
10.
Oh, what? I think you've got the Alien and Predator fanboy thing kicking in there, which I sympathise with, because like I say, I love the Alien, first two Alien movies, the first one specifically, and, you know, I would love them to make it a good game. And once, there were a couple of good games, back when Rebellion were good, and those PC titles.
This isn't Sega, is it? This is someone else.
No, these are the guys who did Muffin Knight, actually. Angry Mob Games is the name.
Was it Capcom that did the first Alien vs. Predator game, the 2D side-scrolling beat-em-up?
Well, the one that was in arcades?
Yeah.
I don't remember, but I remember I've still got a ROM of that around somewhere because...
Piracy! Piracy, James!
Oh, I owned the arcade cabinet, all right. yeah, and yes, that was a very popular game because it was just side-scrolling, blasty fun. This is a third-person kind of arena brawler where you take control of either the alien or the predator and you run around beating the snot out of each other's species and also the marines, which happen to be scampering around, unfortunately. You can't play as the marines. You just rip their necks off and, you know, spit acid in their face and all the other things that the aliens do. Unfortunately, controls poorly, nasty camera. At least this is what Harry said, and so may not be worth your time. But like you say, all the feedback's been 5 stars on the App Store, so maybe we don't know what we're talking about. Mm. So if you're a super fan, you can download that at this very moment. You do have to pay for it, but there is also in-app purchases and all that kind of junk as well. Let me see how much it costs. Because I reckon it's slightly pricey. Yeah, it's £299 or $499.
£299.
Yes, £299, which is a little steep for a 3-star game. 3 stars out of 10.
Or right. 10, depending on your point of view.
It's all right. Just buy it and then say that your kid bought it.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to say everything I've ever got on my any iOS device I have was just some random child who came
naughty. A naughty child stole it from my phone from me, and then they bought a load of stuff. Oh.
In fact, everything I've ever bought, I'm just going to say.
It's the new My Dog Ate It, isn't it?
Yep.
My cat bought it. I'm running with the cat thing. I'm sorry. if a kid can buy it, I've seen cats doing it. Cats can buy in-app purchases. I'm going to say a cat did it.
Do you have a cat?
No.
Right, buy a cat.
Buy a cat, and then I'll take photos of me looking really cross at the cat. It's sitting there, like, looking suspicious next to an iPad.
Yeah.
No, then what, you know, I'll get headlines, and I'll get featured on Eurogamer, and Apple will totally cough up. Yeah. It's a foolproof scheme. Anyhow. Let's look at penumbra. Is this a wordplay or something on something?
Penumbra.
Is it? Did it come out before Penumbra, which was the Amnesia, the previous game from the Amnesia?
Oh yeah, that's why I thought it was maybe a wordplay, because I recognise it's like this. That sounds like something, but I don't know what.
Penumbra.
But whatever it is, it's a. Inverted commas, classic platformer from Bulky Pix.
That's pretty.
And yeah, it is kind of pretty. It's apparently you awaken in the basement of a dark and dangerous castle, and the only other person is a little purple firefly who can turn lights on and off. And apparently what you have to do...
Of course, that happens all the time.
That's what fairies do. They act as remote light switches. Haven't you seen Peter Pan? And you can march left and right, and... apparently, what can he do? He can walk on lines that are created where light and shadow meet.
It's based on a true story, this.
really? No, I don't think so. Apparently, you can use the abilities and escape the confines of the home by working your way through 100 unique stages with shadowy creatures. It looks quite pretty. I don't know, I haven't seen it in motion. Might be good.
It does look pretty.
That's right.
The bear is kind of almost see-through, isn't he? It's just kind of white lines, and then...
It looks to me like he's got a little cape on. He looks like Super Ted. A kind of goth, emo Super Ted.
Super Ted was good.
It was good.
Americans won't know what that is. No,
fair loss, clearly. Super Ted was amazing. But you can get it for £1.49 or $1.99 at this very moment.
Penumbra.
Whatever that means. Now, this one looked kind of interesting, because as Peter knows, I took a fancy to Super Hexagon, as he did. So these kind of ridiculously hard retro arcade games are kind of chic at the moment, but also they're really good fun. There's a new one out. It's called 1001 Attempts, which is probably quite telling of the difficulty level. It's developed by a company called CookieBit, and it's like a dirt simple platformer where you've got this purple square at the bottom of the screen, and you essentially have to just move left and right and jump to avoid falling objects. I say falling. They come from the top of the screen, the side of the screen, all manner of stuff gets flung at you. You're trying to collect some purple jewels whilst not getting battered to death by missiles, blades, drill bits, lasers, anything really. The twist is that it's phenomenally hard, and I think everything's one-touch death.
I like the soundtrack.
Mark played it, and I think he's given it a high mark and says it's actually really, really good fun. It looks fun from the trailer that we've got. It's up on the site. Go and have a look at it. They listed it as something at like $4.99 when it got revealed yesterday, and we were kind of like, that doesn't sound right. Surely not. It's not that. It's 69p99, which is exactly the price it should be. I think it just goes on and on and on. It's one of these endless games where you can just keep going until you die. So I may be downloading that later, because it looks like a laugh. There was a game jam that was held late last year, I think it was, and this team, Butterscotch Shenanigans, they're called.
Great name.
Exactly, kudos for use of the term shenanigans.
That's just random out of a dictionary, that. They just picked two words there.
Yeah, I'm totally down with it. They made a flash game in which you control a dude who can fire animals out of his face with a monocle, and you have to wander around like dungeon-like environments just blasting bosses and stuff.
Is this based on a true story again?
Yes, there's another one of those. The Bible's full of tales like this.
Oh, hold on, guys. Can I, I'm just going to go and grab my checkbook, write a blank check, sign it, and send it to these people, because whatever amount of money they want, I will give it to them.
You're gladly going to pay for this. Well, it was a 48-hour game jam. They knocked it up, and apparently people liked it, so they went, all right, then we'll develop it and turn it into a proper game for iOS. And they have come up with Towel Fight 2, The Monocle of Destiny. Which I don't know. I wanted to see if it was.
How is it two?
Yeah, because the Flash game was the first one.
Oh, right.
And so this is the second one, even though it's the first one to appear on iOS. Technically, it's a sequel. And it's a weird mixture of genres. So it's kind of a mixture of being a sort of top-down dungeon crawler, dual-stick shooter, arena fighter thing. But it's got a very, very wacky-looking art style, and your main character is this bearded dude with a monocle, from which he can launch supercharged animals which have unique abilities. So, for example, wasps which fire laser beams, or bees which fire laser beams, and, I don't know, mutant squirrels, turtles which act as a shield, dragons which can breathe fire, all manner of weird beasties. And it does look kind of fun, I've got to admit. I don't know how much does it cost? Let's see what this blank check you write. What are they going to charge you on the end of it? Oh, they're going to be nice. It's 69p99. That's very bargainous.
Sold.
And reviews have been super positive so far. So, 69p99. Towel Fight 2, The Monocle of Destiny. Go and check that out. The last one we'll do is called Gravity Duck, which we already pointed out has become the standard way of naming games now. You just pick an animal and then, I don't know, pick another noun or an adjective perhaps, whatever, and just, you know, Angry Bird, Gravity Duck.
Surly Badger.
Surly Badger, exactly. Morose Vole.
I went to the doctor with one of those before.
And he was like, this isn't a vet.
And the badger was most put out. Yeah. It's another game, yet another game from Ravenous Games, the guys behind League of Evil, and
I was going to say it looks a bit like that.
Yeah, no, you can see these sort of games a mile off. They did this, they did it in Festa not so long ago. These guys are like machines; they keep knocking these things out. It's not surprising because they do have an awful lot in common. They're all these side-scrolling retro platform games. In this case, the twist is that you control gravity. So you have to navigate your duck protagonist through a bunch of 2D side-scrolly mazes by constantly shifting the direction of gravity. So you'll zoom from right to left, and then you switch gravity, suddenly he rockets off up to the ceiling. And you've got to stop him from smashing into spikes and shards and all that sort of stuff.
It's based on a true story.
Yes, all games are entirely autobiographical, and ducks are surprisingly good at coding.
Or apparently not, considering the score we've given it. But.
Yeah, unfortunately. It came out with a 5 out of 10. Mark said it was cute and clever, but didn't pose any challenge, really, and didn't
called it a lame duck.
Ah, you see, that's why he gets the big editor bucks. generally these games from Ravenous Games do fairly well, as in they get good reviews. League of Evil was an extremely good platformer that I liked. And Infested did pretty well as well. This one apparently didn't really cut the mustard. But I'm sure they're already working on something else. These guys knock them out at the rate of knots. So,
with people knocking things out.
It's a thing. You're still haunted by that. That's totally a phrase that people say.
Yeah, it's what you say. I've not heard anyone else say it.
You're hanging around in the wrong circles. We've been knocking things out for years. Never stop knocking things out.
I don't think you want to combine the phrase knocking things out and circles.
Yes, I do.
I'm thinking about those parties. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably it for new releases. So we're going to get on to an important part of the podcast. Usually we just talk about what we've been playing, three different choices. This time it's going to have a theme, and that theme is Real Racing 3. So let's go and talk about what we've been playing. Right, we're going to do things a little bit differently this week. We're going to focus on a game of choice. The game being Real Racing 3, which came out this week from Fire Monkeys and EA. We've been trailing this for some time, and it's been the subject of previous podcasts, mostly due to the in-app payment system that has been introduced this time around. However, before it was mostly speculation. Now, we've all played it to varying degrees. Peter, you've played it a lot because you reviewed the game.
Yes.
For our site. I have been playing it a bit today in between pretending to do work. And Keith, you have played it for about a second or so.
This is like Goldilocks in 3 days.
Yeah, we're gradually working there. You have looked at the title screen.
I have seen, yeah, the logo's nice.
And you enjoyed some downloading shenanigans.
Yeah.
Which has been, you know, 50% of the experience so far has been downloading it, because it's a pretty big game, 1.7 gig, in fact.
But why does that take so long to download? If that was on your PC, that wouldn't take that long, would it?
I imagine the servers are absolutely getting hammered.
Yeah.
EA should buy a few more, shouldn't they? Honestly.
They're strapped for cash, EA. Come on.
It's just a very small company.
Exactly. So, after all this speculation, the question is Real Racing 3 actually any good? And the secondary question, have the in-app purchases spoiled what could have been a great game?
It's like an exam, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yes, it's a two-part.
Part A, part B.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny you should say that it's like an exam, because we actually asked the question on Twitter. We asked our community a question. We said, have you been enjoying?
Oh, yeah.
And I just want to get these, sort of up front. We've had a couple of really good responses.
Set the tone with the user feedback.
So, Ayaman, it's a great name. Says been enjoying it for over 2 weeks, and I find the waiting times a blessing, because otherwise I'd be playing non-stop, lol.
Okay.
Jose Martinez says on Android it doesn't run as smooth as iOS, and I can't comment on that because I've only been playing it on iOS. We also had Harry Jerkface Slater, for who's one of our writers.
Not Harry.
And he said a rudeness, so I'm not even reading that out. I'm not giving you the pleasure of that, Harry. So I did the review for this, guys.
You did. And you gave it a very good mark.
Yes, I did. Are we saying the score, or do we want people to go and have a look?
No, say the score.
Okay. I gave it a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10, that's a gold award. That's really rather good. That's one less than a 10, Peter.
Yes, it is. And I was at one point... So the way I do reviews is I play something for, like...
Play it?
Yeah, I play it. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, obviously I get in touch with the developer first and ask them for a big load of money so I can find out...
Yeah, that's the only way to do reviews.
Yeah, obviously, that's how everybody knows that. To be clear, I'm joking. just because that.
I think that was understood. But yes, I understand you putting it in bold print.
Yes, yeah. because our review is probably one of the most controversial ones out there. It got some really mixed coverage. One relatively large site gave it a 3 out of 10.
Yep.
And obviously we've given it a 9. And similar sites have given it high scores as well. Mm. I think obviously if you want the full detail of why it's got a 9, then do go and see the review, because the words are really important. But I was at one point really, really tempted to give it a 10. And the reasoning is that it pushes, for me, it pushes the racing genre forward. And that's not just on mobile, but it definitely, like, the fact that it is in your pocket, that is a big factor of that, you know. Like, this is somewhere between, to use sort of console terms, like Gran Turismo 4 and Gran Turismo 5, and a load of extra social elements chucked in, right? So it looks absolutely amazing. I was running it on a 4S, and like it had a little bit of graphical slowdown when things got super busy on track. But apart from that, it was smooth, super, super smooth. And it is so detailed. The car models are fantastic. There's like dust that sort of like poofs up when you go over over the grass, and there's like the tracks just look brilliant. So I put loads and loads of time into Gran Turismo 4, and my favorite track is, and always has been, Laguna Seca.
That's what they start off every time, Laguna Seca. Yeah,
absolutely right. And I love Laguna Seca. I think it's super. I have seen that track, like, I did one of those 8-hour endurance races. I know every single like inch of that track, and it is so well represented in Real Racing 3. It is brilliant. Mm-hmm. The sort of social hooks are really smart. This TSM, which is
time shifted multiplayer.
That's the one. I keep wanting to call it time synced, but it's completely opposite of that. Time shifted multiplayer. So basically, it sort of takes your friends' times and people from around the world's times, and then makes a sort of aggregate performance of that lap based on that time. It's not sort of looking at how aggressively you took a corner or how you shifted and like battled out against opponents and stuff like that. It's just kind of taking the time and making an average of that. So, but because of that, you're constantly seeing your friends pop up and racing in front of you. And when I see Jeff Scott from 148 Apps in front of me, I think I am going to take this guy out. I am going to beat Jeff Scott, and I'm going to do absolutely everything that I can to do it. So it makes every race tense. It makes every race count. So this is all brilliant, right? And so at one point I was sort of like looking at it going, I can't see a problem with this game. But there's two things that kind of hold it back. And the first is, it doesn't have online multiplayer, traditional competitive.
Yeah, at all. It's just the TSM feature.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't bother me too much, because I've always seen like racing games as solitary experiences. I see them as more...
Really?
Yeah, I almost see them as like RPGs. Like, I want to level up and I want to get all of the loot, which are cars, yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, so it doesn't bother me too much, but when I put like, you know, a big chunk of time into this, I thought, do you know what, I want to go and take on the world. I do really want to go and find somebody that's going to jostle with me on the track and stuff like that. And then when I couldn't find it, I sort of thought, oh, this is missing. This really is missing, because it was in Real Racing 2. Mm. And to take it out, it feels like they've incised like a really important part of the game. So that's missing. And then the other thing, which is kind of the other big talking point, obviously, is this in-app purchase stuff. And full disclosure, I love freemium games. Like, I haven't got a problem with them at all. And I don't think they're aggressive in the slightest. I think that there's plenty of ways that you can get around this freemium stuff in Real Racing 3. But if you don't want to spend any money, then yeah, you will have to wait a bit. And I guess that if there is something that is hampering my enjoyment of the experience in some way, in so much as I want to play more because it's so good and I can't, then I suppose that is a sort of, that does detract from the game.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it for as long as you. Obviously, you've been playing it for a view over the course of the last week or whatever. And I've just been playing it today. Sort of first impressions. I actually downloaded it for both iOS and Android.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of like that. Their tweet said, it is quite stuttery on Android, much more so than it is on iOS. But then I'm running on like a Galaxy S2, so it's not even a Nexus or anything like that. So I'm not surprised it chugs a wee bit. But yeah, for a mobile game, obviously it looks pretty good. I will concur that the production values are very strong, that the tracks, you know, are accurately rendered and all that sort of stuff. The steering handles pretty well. I mean, you know, not too dissimilar from Real Racing 2. I didn't play the first one, but the second one I did. So the gyroscopic controls work surprisingly well for the game. I'm still not 100% on gyroscopic controls, but if you have to do them, at least do them well, and they are implemented pretty well here. The issues I have I mean, I guess I'll say that this perhaps isn't really the game for me. Whereas you say that you were a big Gran Turismo enthusiast, Peter. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed like Gran Turismo 2, I think. And then beyond that, I just completely lost interest because I find them quite stale, and I find all these real life, be as real as you possibly can races aren't my bag. My thing is something like Wipeout. I like kind of to go to completely the other end of just totally unrealistic and combat and things going upside down and nonsense, mm-hmm. rather than this, you know, hardcore racing experience.
Wipeout's based on a real life story.
Yes, it's all based on, yes, good grief. Yeah. So this kind of racing game I've always found, I've subsequently found to be less interesting to me. I find them a bit clinical, a bit cold, and, you know, not much to go for. Other thing is, I mean, I'm going to pull more of the criticisms, because that was a pretty glowing review that you put forward. So,
yeah, no. I really want to hear these criticisms.
Yeah. So on the other side of it, the AI... mm-hmm. Now, I know that they're doing, obviously, representations of other races at times with the multiplayer stuff, so that's fine. But there's a difference between kind of aggressive enemy AI and enemy AI that refuse to acknowledge you even exist.
And yeah.
I get a bit of a sense that it's almost as if the other drivers are not aware that I'm on the track.
Yeah, it's a bit robotic. I did sort of see them as almost sort of androids. Like,
yeah. There,
it's a facsimile of human beings in so much as there's a name and it looks like the person and they are driving, they are doing a thing, but they don't react to you. They don't make mistakes, really.
I just feel like I'm weaving around these things, these cars, that they feel like they're on tracks. They're on, you know, like railroad tracks, and they're not budging or moving. And every time I try and sneak past someone or go around, I feel no acknowledgement that I'm there. It makes the whole thing seem very pre-rehearsed and set, and like I'm not really having an impact on the other racers out there.
I think the higher quality a game that you get, and the more important a game that you get, the more important it is to highlight the criticisms, no matter how large or indeed how small. It's like, you know, the uncanny valley. The closer and closer to me that you get for like perfection, the more you're going to notice the things that aren't great.
Absolutely. So little glaring things sort of will stand out more than they would normally.
Yeah.
Now, the in-app purchase system. Now, I haven't been playing for long enough to make a fair judgment of this, I don't think, because, you know, I haven't thrown up against too many problems. I've come up to one servicing, and I've done a bunch of repairs, mm-hmm. all of which were sort of relatively quick time-wise.
Yes.
So that wasn't a problem. The servicing took a little longer, but I was, as I say, doing other things as well. So I can see how the system can work for people who were fitting in a race here and there, do a quick repair, and then go away and do something else. You know, and then come back to it and it's all taken care of. Mm-hmm. Or, like you say, if you want to be a hardcore player and just play it for 4 hours straight, you're going to need to cough up some dough. Or, as you recommend in the review, actually, buy a pack that gives you an alternative car. And then when one's being repaired, you can drive the other one.
Yeah.
And that way you can kind of keep playing. But you are going to have to drop some coin for that, about 450 or something.
Yeah.
So now, that's a way around the system.
This is... The big problem for me with a lot of the discussion around this sort of stuff is, first of all, there was a review, and I won't mention the site because I think that's a little bit gauche, but there was a review that basically said that they'd spent like 15 quid or something like that on a car or two cars or something like that, and that was the only way that they could play it more. For me, what I did was, and I didn't bother in the end because I played it so much, I just unlocked new cars naturally, but there are two purchases in there that come to a total of £4.49, which is 50p less than Real Racing 2, okay? Mm. And with it, you get two cars. So if you buy it straight off the bat, you've got three cars. Now, with three cars, I would say if you drive well, you can probably play for like an hour easily. Like a long hour without having to quit out the game or anything like that. Probably a little bit longer, actually.
Okay.
And I guess I don't really know anybody who's playing a mobile game for more than an hour. If you're spending £4.49, like that you're done. You've covered your commute. And I guess the other thing is, with the amount of time that you could put into that game, you're going to unlock more cars. And as you unlock more cars, you get more access to the game. Like, that's just the way that that game is built. And it's... I guess I just can't... I can't fathom why there is so much sort of backlash to this freemium freemium payment model. I think it's a really brave thing that they've done, and it's a really shining example of how to do it. Like, give people the option of buying loads of more content if they were going to pay for a premium, like a game that is from a series that is traditionally premium anyway. And then open it up to everybody else so that all of your friends can play for free and get involved more. Like, I just don't...
Well, to come at it from a sort of slightly different angle,
like, yeah, go
I'm,
for it, yeah.
I'm not never been a huge fan of the in-app system. I'm not, like I said, I've never been one of these people who's like, it's all evil, but no. I haven't been a great fan of it, and it's been implemented very badly in the past. My issue with this, and like I say, I haven't spent any money in it yet, is I don't know where I stand with it. As in the actual game itself, it almost feels like working out what you need to buy or what you should buy becomes a mini game in and of itself.
Right.
So you're kind of having to like game the game to keep it running. Rather than me just going, oh, I'm going to try and race well and unlock the next thing. I'm having to do these kind of sub calculations where like I'm going to try and race well, but then this is going to run out in a bit, and then I'm going to have to pay money to keep it going or use up a gold credit, or it's going to stop and I can't do it, and then I have to, oh no, I've got to fix it, so then I'm going to have to put it down for an hour, or I'm going to have to pay more. Do I have any money to buy more? No, I don't. Do I have enough money in my credit card to do it? No, I don't. And all of this stuff is getting in the way of me playing a game.
But do you know what's not getting in the way of you playing the game? The price barrier. I completely...
No, but that's what I mean. The looking at whether you've got enough gold and things like that, that does tally into the price. Because if you run out of it or if you don't have enough, then there's then that issue of like, right, I'm either going to have to wait or do I need to buy more? As in, yeah, you buy actual cash.
Of course, yeah. I do absolutely understand your point. And I am sort of playing... To be perfectly fair, I am playing sort of devil's advocate here, but... The metagame that you're talking about is the sort of sacrifice for not paying £5 up front.
Yeah, and I guess that's where I've always fallen. Like, I'm a person who would rather buy a thing and then have it and then just relax and enjoy rather than having to worry. I mean, it's that problem that games now feel like they're shops with a game in.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking just for me, I don't like shopping. I don't like being in a situation where there are loads of things around you constantly asking you or offering you things you can have for money in the hope that you will give them your cash. I don't like being particularly in that situation, and I certainly don't like being in it when I'm in the middle of a game. So I would much rather it let me progress whether I was, you know, on the basis of whether I was good or not, or whether I did a thing or not, or whether I achieved an achievement or not, and my speed wasn't affected by anything other than that. Now, it's a personal thing. And the more games become like shops, the less I know where I stand, because I have this feeling that, have I progressed to this next level because I'm good? And maybe it's taken, you know, several tries to do it. I've had to go back and farm some cash from an earlier level in order to allow me to buy the car that I need to get to the next bit. Or should I just not bother doing that and I should just pay and do it? And if so, has that just cheapened the whole thing for me? Or is that what everyone's doing? Is everyone buying? So I should probably buy and pay up for it. And there's this, I don't know where I stand with the game. And it affects my ability to judge my own progress.
Well, I think if that is something that's affecting you, then that is a failure of the game. Like, then that is definitely
to me it is, but not necessarily, because obviously this model has proved hugely successful, and so it's a very vocal group of people who object to it, but it's making money, therefore it must be working for a lot of people, or at least it could be the whales, it could just be a very small amount of very, very rich people. For me, I find it difficult to enjoy it because I'm constantly second guessing myself. As to whether I should have bought something, whether I shouldn't, or should I pay money, or is that me failing at the game if I have to cough up for cash, or should I just not think about it and blow all my money on it, and then I'll discover later that I didn't actually need to pay that money, I could have just, you know, it's all very up in the air, and I suddenly the rules of the game become very indistinct as soon as you start bringing this I can pay my way to victory thing, and it turns me off the experience. I don't want to shop, I want to play.
To answer that pay my way to victory, that isn't something you can do. Like, there's nothing in the game that is the sort of version of like an insta win for money. There's none of that. So it's paying the IAP model that RR3 implements is way more focused on restricting your access to the content that it provides rather than rewarding you with like a temple run, for example, mm-hmm. rewarding you with extra bonuses so that you can do better and reach higher scoreboards. In fact, I just checked, I was kind of like tinkering around with it, and when I was kind of like looking through Game Center and so forth, there are no like leaderboards or anything like that at the moment.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, that's not, you know, there is no sort of pay your way to victory in that way. I think my sort of advice for the game overall is don't worry about spending money on upgrades because they're totally worth it, and don't bother spending any of your gold on like speeding up the process. Like, play the game as much as you can get out of it, like, and enjoy it. And as soon as you get to the point where you can't make any more progress, I think that's the point that you just quit out and go, okay, that's all I'm going to play for the day. Like, for me, that's probably the best thing that you can do. That's the best way that you can experience Real Racing 3 and a lot of freemium games in that way.
Well, Keith,
I've been racing here as you've been talking.
Splendid. Good. All right.
The whole payment thing never really bothers me.
No.
Because I figure if you're not enjoying it, you won't pay, and then you'll know whether the game's any good or not. And so I think ultimately, Real Racing 3, people will know in a good few months' time whether it's for them or not, because they'll know if they're still playing. And, you know, I think ultimately all these things by companies such as EA are all experiments to see what they can and can't do, what will and won't work. And, you know, at some point it may be that Real Racing games in the future will go back to being paid. We'll find out. You know, yeah. It's certainly going to make a lot of money to begin with. But, you know, we can't really judge. I mean, in essence, I think it almost seems... I'd be inclined not to even really mention how the purchase system in any reviews, because it's going to be different for everyone, whether they're enjoying it or not. And ultimately, actually, that's the best review you can give it, whether you carry on playing or not. But secondly, the bigger issue for me, having just kind of gone through it, I mean, I haven't played either of the first two because they just look really dull to me. I love races. I will spend hours and hours and hours. One of my favorite series ever is Project Gotham, and I can play that till the cows come home, and did, and would regularly be up till all hours of the morning playing it. But that's how I want to play racing games. I want to play them for hours, and I want to play them on a big screen, and I don't want it to auto-accelerate for me. I don't want it to brake for me. I don't want to be... I mean, you know, just using that there, the actual accelerometer is very impressive. It's like a real car in that you're actually... It's like before you learn to drive, you assume you have to really turn the wheel to turn your car, and then you start driving, you realise that it's really the moves you make are tiny, and that's the same actually. It's well balanced, but I've just won the first four things I've done first go without even trying, because what am I doing? I'm just tilting to go around bends. It's, I don't know. I'm assuming it gets much more difficult than that.
Well,
but I don't know.
You really need to turn. You really need to turn off all of the assists.
Yeah, but if I turn them all off, then it's become a chore. I mean, I'm not the kind of guy.
It's become a simulation at that point. It's not a chore.
Well, yeah, but that's not a game, though, is it? That's my problem always with Gran Turismo. I've never liked Gran Turismo.
Project Gotham.
Project Gotham is a
simulation racer.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not in any way real. I mean, you're flying around corners to get kudos points. You know, it's completely fictitious, and it's far closer to an arcade game than it is
game. No, that's poppycock.
I'm slightly with Keith on this one. It does take some arcade elements. It's still
Project
got a very
Project Gotham.
It's not
utterly...
Outrun, is it?
No, but I don't mean not, that's not all how arcades have to be, but it isn't a simulation in any way. You know, you've got real cities and stuff, but the whole idea of it is that you're doing impossible things to earn, you know, a point system that you couldn't possibly have in real life. It's an arcade game. It's not a simulation game. It's a brilliant game, but you couldn't, it's not like Gran Turismo. You don't have to spend any time thinking about what your suspension is like or what tires you need. You know, it's fun. But my point is I don't want to be having to fret about this and thinking I've got to turn all the aids off to enjoy it, because then it does become a simulation. Simulations aren't for me. But even if they were, I wouldn't want to play it on my phone. A simulation. If I'm going to try and make myself think that I'm actively driving these cars, I want to do it on a big screen with one of them stupid steering wheels you can buy and, you know, a fake gear stick and all this nonsense that people get into. If that's what you're into, then you're not into it on your phone. I find it hard to understand the popularity of this beyond it being like a tech demo. Always, you know, real racing in general, I've never been inclined to download it. You look at pictures and videos, you think, wow, that is impressive. And it runs a bit like Paula Radcliffe on a marathon, to be honest, on my iPod. It's kind of stopping and starting and jerking all over the place. But I can see that it is incredibly impressive visually. Mm. But it just feels so soulless to me. It's just another racing game where you buy a car. If I'm going to do that, and there are plenty of people that do, I'll do that on a console. And I don't know whether that's particularly an unpopular thing to say these days, but it just doesn't feel like a phone game to me. Why is this on a phone? There's no reason for it to be on a phone. It gains nothing from being portable, and it doesn't actually really make use of the technology, other than actually to kind of give you an easy ride because it knows you can't really steer that well. You know, if it actually had an on-screen steering wheel, you'd be awful. So it has to make use of this accelerometer and give you a bit of an easy ride. Otherwise, you'd be all over the place. I quite like the fact that, I mean, Will Wilson's face has popped up on cars as I've been playing it, and I'm thinking I want to beat him because it's, you know, Will. But I don't know. It just seems an odd fit to me that if you're delivering a game to mobile that people are going to want to play for hours, so you then split it up in a way, as you know, judging by what Peter was saying, that either you kind of pay out so you can play for hours, or you just play it in short bursts. And both of those things, it seems like a series of compromises to me. It just as a very base level, you know, if someone brought out Project Gotham on phones, I wouldn't, you know, I'd be like, what are you doing? I don't want to play that on my phone. You know, why would I want to sit hunched over my phone to play that? I want to play a game that's designed for phones on my phone.
Well, I'd say that's fair enough. Like, you know, you would prefer these things to be played on a big screen in a console. I think there is a pretty big market still that does enjoy it. I mean, both Real Racing and especially the second one did prove very popular. So there clearly is an audience of people who want to do this.
There is an audience, but I just think it's a game. The issue for me isn't anything to do with freemium. You know, that is actually, it's a way of finding out whether a game is any good or not for me, because if it isn't, then as soon as someone asks you to pay out money for something, you know whether you're enjoying it or not, because unless you're absolutely nuts and a millionaire, you think, well, actually, that's money I've worked for. I'm not going to pay that out if I'm not enjoying it. So that just really isn't an issue. I mean, we ran a story, you know, that was from 148 Apps about how it would cost $503 to complete. Well, anyone who spends $503 to complete, fair enough. If they want to spend that money, that's up to them. They're obviously enjoying it. Everyone else, I don't see why it's an issue, because you'll know as soon as you come up against some kind of paywall whether you want to pay or not. But for me, the wider issue is long term, and I think there's going to be more of these kind of games. Are they really mobile games? I don't think they are.
Well,
divided.
That was properly divisive. Excellent. Well, that's the idea, isn't it? I mean, like I say, I've only been playing it for today, so these are all initial impressions from me. And Peter, you spent a good deal more time with it and have been able to work out systems of play and such like. So if you want to learn how the full story and how Peter got on with it, do go and have a look at pocketgamer.co.uk and check out the Real Racing 3 review. It's very exhaustive and gives you a couple of little hints, as we've mentioned, about how you can spend some money in order to sort of unlock the full potential of the game, let's say. I'm going to carry on playing it just as an experiment to see how long it goes, how long it lasts before I get completely locked out or whatever. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll suddenly start loving it. Who knows? But a bit of an extended episode this week because of that discussion, but it was a long time in the coming. You feel any better, Peter? Do you feel any at all, you know, release has been had now?
Yeah, I've got some chewing gum on the go, and I've had a lovely discussion. So feel like I've got some pent up anger out of me. That's good.
Excellent.
But yeah, it's been good. This is my therapy. This is my Thursday therapy.
This is the talking cure.
So, yeah.
Excellent. All right then. Well, thanks for sticking with us through all of this. And I guess if you're interested, download Real Racing 3 yourself and then tell us what you think. We've had a bunch of correspondence already, both sides of the spectrum, but add your voice to the noise. And because really, whether this kind of thing takes off and whether these models continue to proliferate in future games, it's really down to whether you guys like it. If you keep spending money, they will keep making the games. So it's in your hands. So download it, have a look, and let us know what you think. Obviously, check out the rest of the site for all the reviews. Find us on Twitter at Pocket Gamer and Facebook as well. Thanks for sticking with us, and from my two companions for joining me today. We will catch up with you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your iPhone gaming. Bye.
Bye.